Good morning. You're listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm Arcee Chapa. This morning, we're focusing on men's health. With Father's Day coming up this weekend and June being Men's Health Month, health officials are encouraging men to take a more proactive approach to their health. Colorectal cancer, prostate cancer, and skin cancer are prevalent among men. All are treatable if caught early enough. The key has always been getting men to understand the importance of prevention, and we're going to talk about that this morning. Our guests this morning include Dr. Jim Tryon, also Dr. Stephen Weiss. Dr. Stephen Weiss is a clinical assistant professor at UNM's Department of Family and Community Medicine. Also, he's in private practice as an integrative and holistic medical doctor. And also Tom Davis. Tom is a board member of the Prostate Cancer Support Association and also a prostate cancer survivor. Good morning to all of you.
Good morning, Arcee.
Good morning.
Good morning. Dr. Tryon, I'm going to start with you because I didn't get a chance to really introduce you. Can you give me a little bit more about your background?
Well, sure. I'm an assistant professor at UNM and in private practice, board certified in family medicine, mm-hmm. Emergency medicine, and board eligible in palliative care.
Okay, wonderful. And Tom, tell me a little bit about your organization.
Well, the Prostate Cancer Support Association of New Mexico supports people who have been diagnosed with prostate cancer. Mm-hmm. We encourage everyone who's been diagnosed to take time to really look at all of the options that are available to them.
Mm-hmm. And, go ahead.
Whether it be surgery or radiation or mm-hmm. just watchful waiting, we support their choices and encourage them to be active with their physician in mm-hmm. selecting the treatment that they are going to have.
And Dr. Weiss, you can introduce yourself as well.
Sure. Yes, I practice integrative medicine, which means that I have studied Western medicine and completed a residency, but my real interest is in natural methods and integrating them with conventional medicine. Mm-hmm. So in this topic, men's health, there are quite a number of approaches that are integrative that benefit men. And so I'm sure I'll be sharing those throughout this hour.
Well, so let's start with a pretty general question. How often do men need to get a general checkup, and what do doctors look for, and when should you start getting a checkup? I've read 40, 50. Women start at 18.
In my opinion, 40 is a good time to begin. Mm-hmm. For men. I've seen several men who have had prostate cancer in their 40s, in their early 40s even. So I do think that's a good time to begin. What do you think, Dr. Tryon?
Mm-hmm. Well, we both know that there aren't any real clear guidelines. I tend to follow the Adult Preventive Services Task Force guidelines, and they use 50 as the age where you might start really screening for prostate cancer, although the previous recommendations have started at 40 with a physical exam.
So current screening standards suggest an annual colonoscopy and a PSA, and you'll have to say what that is, because I forgot what that is, and prostate test at age 50, I think is what they're saying. And the urologist and the American Cancer Society recommend screening for prostate cancer at age 40. So, you know, both of you are correct in that age in what you're saying. But do men actually do that? Are you seeing men coming in at 40 or even at 50?
Yes. Again, it's a mixed bag. You know, mm-hmm. the people that I see tend to be health conscious. Mm-hmm. And so they are interested in prevention. Mm-hmm. That's one of the reasons they come to me. And so I'm not my my patient population isn't really consistent with the entire population. So I don't know with the patient population that Dr. Tryon sees. I'm sure that it's a smaller percentage that actually.
Right, Dr. Weiss is right. I think what the studies show is that for physicians that have established relationships with their population, those men are most likely to have to be compliant with the screening processes and so forth. Mm-hmm. And then when you start looking at populations that move away from relationship-based contact with their physician, then you're less likely to see the application of the screening guidelines.
So what is it that you're looking for when men do come and ask for a checkup?
Well, it's a continuum of things to focus on. And we start, of course, with what their basic concerns are, and then we try to drill down on their family history, their social circumstances, what their personal philosophy is on health care. And what I do personally is I try to juxtapose that against the screening guidelines that have been put out by the Preventive Services Task Force. So focus on blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, colorectal screening at the proper ages, immunization. In the younger ages, we look at injury prevention, make sure the immunizations are current. Talk about the sexuality and sexual disease issues and so forth. So it's an age-dependent process.
So the PSA stands for prostate-specific antigen blood test. Do you recommend those as a regular exam? I was reading that there was a debate going on about whether those should be done regularly or whether the results are even valid.
Well, the results are valid in terms mm-hmm. of but again, you have to define what that means. Mm-hmm. It's not a specific test for prostate cancer. And there is a raging debate in medicine about the use of PSA as a screening tool. Mm-hmm. And the important thing, and this is what the literature also says, is you really have to have a discussion with the patient so that they understand that there are risks and benefits of having the test done, because it often results in unnecessary procedures or diagnosing cancers that really are not going to kill the person in the long run. They're going to die of something else, mm-hmm. and so the treatment would actually be unnecessary. Any treatment even if there's cancer diagnosed, cancer is often a slow growing. Prostate cancer is often a slow growing tumor. And many men, over 50%, I've read in the 60-plus percent of men in their 70s will have prostate cancer, mm-hmm. and it increases as we age. So there is the important thing is having a frank discussion with the patient about what the test is. And that you may, by getting the test, you may actually have to undergo unnecessary diagnostic and treatment measures. Mm-hmm. So as long as the patient is informed, then I do order it.
So I want to talk about the treatment, but first I want to give out the phone numbers. I would like for our listeners to join in the conversation, and to also, if you have any questions for the doctors that we have on the program this morning, the number to call outside the metropolitan area is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. But first I want Dr. Tryon also answer the question regarding the debate on the PSAs.
It gets to be very confusing. The PSA was actually introduced in the United States around 1980, right around that point in time. And if you look at when it became widespread in its use, then the incidence of prostate cancer diagnosis increased dramatically, but the mortality didn't necessarily change. And so what we discovered was that we might be able to diagnose the prostate cancer early, but many of these disease states were indolent, and they may not have progressed to become a life-threatening process. So one study that's worth mentioning was that in a study of 1,400 men over a 9-year period, it was discovered that that would be the population you would have to screen with a PSA in order to prevent one mortality. So that's a kind of theoretical understanding of the dilemma, but in my opinion, we can use the PSA in a broader subjective way. By doing the PSA and by engaging the patient in the discussion, then we're increasing their awareness of the disease state and actually being able to expand it to other non-prostate related illnesses that keep them engaged in the healthcare process.
So say the PSA determines that you may have prostate cancer. What is the treatment and what are the options for treatment?
Of course, it would depend on what your abnormals are. And there's even today, there's debate about what is an abnormal PSA. In the literature, if you look at the strictest definition, they'll say a PSA over 3 or 4 is abnormal. I don't use that definition. There's a gray area between 4 and 10 where it may be difficult to interpret. And then usually, at least in the older literature, if the PSA was greater than 10, then we were more confident that it might be a malignancy. Mm-hmm. Ideally, we use those values in conjunction with a physical exam to see if we can actually detect the presence of a prostate lesion. If we do that, and if we get a clear enough sense that there is a lesion present, then From Dr. Weiss's and my perspective, I think our next step is to refer to a urologist, and they'll have the discussion about whether radiation or surgical or hormonal treatment is appropriate based on the patient's age and the perceived extent of the disease and their other health factors.
Dr. Weiss.
Yes. So, of course, a biopsy is how the cancer is diagnosed, and through the pathology, you can find out how aggressive the tumor is. It's something called a Gleason score, and that's extremely important in stratifying the risk of the patient. And so once they've gone through all of that, and it really makes a difference, a low Gleason score is the aggressiveness of the cancer is very different between a low and a high Gleason score. And so, in fact, my father, I have both my grandfather and my father have been diagnosed with prostate cancer, and Gleason scores can change. So my father's score was low initially. It was medium, he was treated as a watchful waiting, and that worked fine. And then they re-biopsied him several years later, and they found the cancer had become more aggressive. And they caught it in time. So that's a very important factor. But in terms of treatment, what I do in my office is to supplement some of the conventional therapies with alternative therapies. Mm-hmm. And there's several that I use, which have been studied in clinical trials. Mm-hmm. And things such as, I don't know if we'll get into this later, if you want to devote some specific time to that.
Yeah. I do. I want to right now take some of our callers who are anxious to join the conversation. And again, we'd love to hear from you. We want to hear your questions. We have doctors in the studio who are ready to take your questions. The number to call outside the metropolitan area is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And I believe we have Glenn on the line from Jemez. Glenn, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for the program. Mm-hmm. I'm 67, aches and pains occasionally. And my wife, who has seen one of your guests, has said that turmeric, a natural anti-inflammatory, is a good pill to take daily, and I do. And then she said that she read someplace that taking a green tea capsule along with that even heightens the anti-inflammatory properties. And so I do both religiously daily, and I'm just wondering if we're out on a limb someplace or if the doctors could comment, and thank you.
Dr. Weiss.
Sure. Yes, in fact, I have an article with me written by Dr. Aaron Katz. He is the director of the Center for Holistic Urology at Columbia, And he wrote a very good review article on the natural treatment of prostate cancer. And both turmeric and green tea are in this particular article. And those are actually there's another article that I brought in called The Fabulous Five Most Effective Compounds Against Cancer. And those are two of the five listed. They both have potent anti-cancer potential and properties, and have been. Curcumin, which is the active ingredient in turmeric, is probably the most powerful natural anti-cancer agent on the planet.
Cumin?
Curcumin.
Oh, curcumin.
Is the active ingredient.
In turmeric.
In turmeric,
okay,
yeah.
Or turmeric.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And it affects cancer on many different levels, including something called epigenetics, which is it actually can change the genetic structure in a positive way to reduce the promotion or turning on of cancerous genes. But it also helps promote cell death, which is apoptosis, and has numerous anti-cancer properties, and it's of course extremely safe. It's a food that's used in that's part of curry, and so it's consumed in large amounts in India and in Asia, and very safe. And green tea is the same. It has been studied against many different forms, several different forms of cancer, and again, prostate is one of them that it seems to be active against. So it's very safe and effective, and I highly recommend that. I think you're on a good regime.
Okay, we've got Alan on the line. Alan, good morning.
Yeah, hi, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, so my question is that, I just recently had an annual physical exam, and they did blood work, and my PSA was high. It was like 11.1. And so my GP referred me to a urologist, and I've made an appointment, and I haven't gone yet. But what would be like the very first initial follow-up that you would do with them? Because there was no mention on when he did the prostate kind of exam of any, feeling anything wrong. So what would be the first thing that they would do before they would jump in and do a biopsy or something like that? Anyway, I'll take the message off. I'll turn off my phone and put the radio back on, okay?
Thank you, Alan. Yeah. I mean, Richard, sorry.
Yeah, Richard, hi, this is Dr. Tryon. I think first thing that the urologist may do would be a prostate ultrasound, and he may decide to do a biopsy with that to determine the tissue sample to see if there really is cancerous tissue present, and then, like Dr. Weiss was talking about earlier, to do a Gleason score. But having said that, I'll just add that I have several patients whose PSAs have run in the 10 to 20 range for years and have continually had negative biopsies and don't have prostate cancer. So that also speaks to the vagaries of the PSA as a test.
Okay, now we have Richard on the line. Richard, good morning.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Yes, hi. I'm a physician assistant occasionally doing prostate exams, and I'm really wondering about, given the limitations of my anatomy and the patients, what the real value is as far as percentage sensitivity for that exam. It seems like you do it because it can be done and it may detect something, but really so much of the gland is left really inaccessible. So again, I'll hang up and listen to the answer.
Actually, you're exactly right. You know, the current recommendation from the Adult Preventive Services Task Force is to not do the exam. So I'm not sure that I agree with that, but that's because I've been practicing for 32 years, and I'm an old dog and trained in older ways. And so, but I see the exam, even understanding its limitations, as a gateway to looking for other disease states. Remember, when you're doing the rectal exam for the prostate, you're also checking the rectum itself and so forth. So you do get information. I think you've made the important point that it's not a perfect exam, and that many things can go undiagnosed even though you do the exam. So you do need to apply a little Kentucky windage to the process.
Dr. Weiss.
Yeah, I mean, I actually still think it's also that it's a beneficial exam. There are nodules that are detectable even with the PSA, with a low PSA. It's rare. It's very rare. But I think if you're one of the men that had that and you didn't have, you know, it's so again, of course, you have to, you know, time is a commodity, and we don't have time to do everything. But I still, you know, it's also my training. And I agree with Dr. Tryon. It's not just to check the prostate. It's to check for, we check for blood in the stool, which is an important, you know, when we do the prostate exam, we can feel for rectal tumors. So my recommendation is to continue to have an annual rectal exam after age 40.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be back in a moment. We're talking about men's health this morning, and in the studio we have Dr. Jim Tryon and also Dr. Stephen Weiss and Tom Davis, who is a prostate cancer survivor. He will be joining us in just a moment. And again, the numbers to call to join the conversation, the number outside, the toll-free number is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866, and we'll be back in just a moment.
Homemade real Italian pizza, calzones, pasta, salads, and desserts. Serving Albuquerque and the UNM community since 1968. Saggio's encourages support of public radio KUNM on Cornell Southeast across from UNM and at saggios.com.
Funding for the KUNM Call-In Show comes from the New Mexico Community Foundation, growing our future together, on the web at nmcf.org, and by the McCune Charitable Foundation.
The Nutcracker in June? Anything's possible in KUNM's online auction, and if you bid and win tickets this Friday, you'll pay far less than you'll pay in December. The same is true for the Telluride and New Mexico Jazz Festival, Global Kirky, tango lessons, children's dance classes, kung fu, Pilates, yoga, jewelry, you name it. Don't miss all the great bargains, but hurry. It all ends this Friday at 5 p.m. Find something perfect for you by clicking through to the auction from KUNM.org.
And we're back. You are listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm R.C. Chapa, and this morning we're focusing on men's health, and I believe we have Rob on the line. Rob, good morning.
Good morning, gentlemen. Thank you so much for taking my call. And Tom, congratulations. Good for you. I am of the adage that what you don't know will kill you. And I'm in my early 50s, and I had my PSA level go up from 2.5 to like 3.1. So I ended up going to a urologist, and the first thing he says is biopsy. And they didn't protest. I said, okay. So I have it done. They oversaturated the sampling, took 20 samples out of a normal, mind you, normal size, 34 millimeters, I think it was, or 34 centimeters. And so they find nothing. And I'm fine, then all of a sudden I develop prostatitis. My question is, why is it, and I'm mad at myself for letting them do the biopsy, but why is it that they just jump to the biopsy, you know, with only a slight rising and I'll of the PSA level? And I'll listen for the phone, the answer off the air. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Dr. Weiss.
There are guidelines in terms of what's called PSA velocity and PSA doubling time, and actually, so those are some of the guidelines that urologists should be looking at in terms of making a decision whether or not to biopsy. So the time between the interval of the 3.1 PSA and the 2.5 is actually quite important. If that happened over a 3-month period, or if it happened over a year period, so. So I don't know what the time difference is between those two tests. I also think that urologists are trained to do surgery and more invasive procedures, and so there is a bias certainly
of urologists to actually do procedures. And so that, you know, that may be one of the reasons. But I do think that the recommendations are changing, as we discussed earlier. And we're less, you know, doctors are less, in general, less eager to jump right in and do even a biopsy. What do you think, Dr. Tryon?
I certainly agree with the understanding of the time element with the change in the PSA and so forth. I think what I encourage my men to do is to have a conversation with me about what do I think should be the next step and what would I anticipate from a referral to a specialist, to a urologist, and so forth. So hopefully you have a good relationship with your primary care physician, and this is a conversation that you can get into.
Well, we've talked a lot about prostate cancer this morning, and I know there are other calls related to prostate cancer as well. But what are the most common ailments that men suffer from as they age? I was reading that men's life expectancy remains less than women, about 5 years less on average. And I know that men also go through, andropause? It's not menopause, but that also affects their health. And whereas women have a sentinel event in their changing hormones when they stop their periods, men don't. Men with low testosterone can be cranky, lethargic, lack sexual interest or ability, gain weight, lose muscle, or lose interest in daily activities. And so I want to, and most of them write them off as just getting older, but there are probably treatments for testosterone levels, and there are symptoms as well, that some of them that I mentioned. So I'm saying these things so that we can expand the conversation from prostate cancer, although that seems to be of interest to a lot of folks. But let me get Ted on the line. Ted, good morning.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Okay. Well, I wonder if the doctors would discuss enlarged prostate. I had a PSA that was less than 5, and the doctor recommended a biopsy, which I put off for 2 years. And when the biopsy results came in, it was benign. And I was told that my prostate was 20% larger. I think they said 20% larger. It was 5 centimeters. And I don't have any symptoms. And I was later prescribed terazosin. And but once again, with no symptoms, and I've never taken that drug.
Mm-hmm. Well, when you say, this is Dr. Weiss, when you say you have no symptoms, do you wake up at night to urinate?
I've done that all my life.
Really? I mean, it hasn't gotten worse in recent years?
No, sometimes it's never been bothersome. And if I'm very nervous, then I might wake up twice. If I'm not nervous, once, and it's never more than twice.
Okay. Well, I mean, if there hasn't been a change and you're not bothered by any symptoms, then there's really no need to do anything right now. I mean, enlargement of the prostate is not a precursor to prostate cancer, as far as I know. So, you know, it's more a question of your quality of life. And there are some wonderful natural supplements, in my opinion, that do help symptoms. So for men that are having frequent urination, slow stream, post-void dribbling, which is passage of a little bit of urine after you're finished voiding. I mean, there are several supplements that can help those symptoms, such as saw palmetto and Pygium africanum and beta sitosterol. But for you, there is no real need to do anything at this point.
Okay, well, let's see. We've got Ed on the line. All our lines are full, so I'm going to try to get to everybody. Next, we have Ed. Good morning, Ed.
Hi, good morning. I wanted to share my experience to add to the confusion and complexity about this issue, in the sense of I had a doctor throw in a PSA test when I was 48 without telling me, and it came back 4.1. And I discussed it with my brother, who's a physician assistant, and he was all ticked off that he would do that. I went off to the urologist, and they did biopsies, and they all came back positive. So I had the prostate removed, and the final conclusion after the biopsy of the prostate gland was that I had about 6 months before it escaped the capsule. So it just adds more confusion to the test and what a patient needs to do and the interaction between doctor and patient. So I just wanted to add that comment. I know it doesn't help, but it does add to the issue.
Actually, I think that's a very helpful comment. You know, I think if we can just step away from the specifics of prostate disease and move more globally to the necessity of men having a good relationship with their physician, some of these issues can actually be understood and dealt with in a broader context. For example, the discovery that you had a PSA done and it was 4.1, and what should you do with it at this point in time? In my experience, in my opinion, that could have been repeated in 3 months. You could have a discussion with the patient ongoing. You have a chance to understand what the ramifications might be, and then try to develop an alliance with your physician, with the patient, about what the next step should be, so that if you do need to go and see, in this case, urologist, then you have an understanding and an expectation about what might follow.
And one of the things that I want to add into the mix is another thought, is that what are some of men's health issues that might not be so specific to biology? Are there social and cultural differences between men and women with respect to health? And you can think about that while we get our next caller on the line. Jesse, good morning. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Hi, I was I just tuned in. I caught a little bit of the five anti-cancer superfoods, so to say, I guess. I heard turmeric and green tea, and I was just curious what the other five were, or what all five were.
Yes, sure. One of them is genistein, which is a isoflavone from soy. And the other two are related to cruciferous vegetables. One is indole-3-carbinol and diindolemethane. The DI, which is DIM, and DIM is actually the active form of I3C, so that's actually, they're really this one and the same. It's just that the DIM is more biologically active. And you've heard that cruciferous vegetables prevent cancer preventatives, and it's most, the active ingredient is this DIM. And so, but you have to consume a large amount of cruciferous vegetables to get the biological activity of one capsule of DIM. So,
and what are cruciferous vegetables?
Things like broccoli, cauliflower, cabbage, kale, Brussels sprouts.
Mm-hmm. Those are okay.
Yeah.
And do these work for women as well? We had a call from an email question regarding whether these are good for women
as
well.
Yes, they are.
Okay. Now let's see. We've got Glenn on the line. Glenn, good morning.
Yeah, my wife had a question but had to run off to work. She has a male friend who encouraged her to stop using the microwave, that some kind of study indicated that using microwaved water will actually end up killing plants. And so could the docs comment on radiation and microwaves? Thank you.
I'm familiar with that study. It was It actually, the genesis was from a high school girl's attempt at demonstrating that microwave water was toxic to plants. And it was a completely uncontrolled study with numerous variables. And the results were never duplicated. So the bottom line is that microwave water is not harmful to biological life.
Dr. Weiss.
I can't say that I have looked at the research carefully, so I'm not speaking from a totally scientific viewpoint, but I don't necessarily agree. I've read some. I think Dr. Mercola has written on this, and has given some research to back it up. I think there was some Russian studies actually about the harmful nature of microwaves. And I actually have gotten rid of my microwave and do not use it. I don't know of any very good studies that either support or refute it.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Trine.
Well, actually, in those Russian studies, what they discovered was that the harm came from the fact that the microwave machines were poorly insulated, and so when that was corrected, then the problem went away. And I would refer interested listeners to Dr. Novella from Yale, who's published on this particular issue, and it's his conclusion that microwaves are completely safe. I mean, he does advise that you don't stand right next to a microwave when you're using it, but as far as the general application of microwave for foods, it seems to be safe.
Well, Tom Davis, I want to get to you because you were gracious enough to come here this morning, and you have an event that's happening this Saturday that I don't want to run out of time because we've got lots of callers. And again, callers, the toll-free number to call this morning to ask your question regarding any health issue for men's health. We want to hear from you. The number to call is 877-899-5866. In Albuquerque, the number is 277-5866. And Tom, you are a prostate cancer survivor.
Yes, I am. I had prostate cancer diagnosis on April 15th of 1996. This was a result of having been very conscious of my health and following my PSA. My PSA doubled in a year. We redid it, and it doubled in 3 months. So neither my doctor or urologist could find anything with the DRE, so they asked me if I would agree to have a punch biopsy. I had six biopsies, and my Gleason score was relatively low, but with the doubling, the urologist suggested that I immediately take some action. I'd been exposed to large amounts of radiation while I was in the Navy, so the urologist suggested that I mm-hmm. consider having surgery. I had surgery, and the result of the pathology was that I had one of the most aggressive types of prostate cancer possible, and the doctor said I probably wouldn't live more than 2 years if I hadn't had something done.
So surgery as opposed to more radiation.
That's right. He was afraid that if I'd had a lifetime of radiation already, that radiation would not be a very good mm-hmm. choice.
So we're going to take a very short break, and we'll be back with some of our listeners who have more questions and our guests this morning, which include Dr. Jim Tryon, Dr. Stephen Weiss, and you were just listening to Tom Bass. Tom Davis. He is a board member with the Prostate Cancer Support Association of New Mexico, and we'll be right back.
Women's Health Services offers state-of-the-art primary health care. For 38 years, their doctors and nurse practitioners have delivered a full spectrum of clinical care for all ages, women, children, and men. From internal medicine, behavioral health, and family medicine to gynecology, Women's Health Services provides comprehensive care and healing for the whole person. For an appointment, call 505-988-8869 or find them on the web, whssf.org. A message from the tax-exempt Women's Health Services.
Time is running out. KUNM's online auction closes this Friday at 5 p.m. Many items have no bid and could be yours for the minimum bid. You'll find artwork, authentic celebrity-signed items, classes, tickets, health, fitness, and business services that are available for a small fraction of their value. Scoop up the bargains and help KUNM, too. It's best to enter the highest bid for your favorites and let the computer bid for you in case you can't be online at 5 p.m. this Friday. Click to the auction from KUNM.org.
And we're back. You are listening to The Call-In Show on New Mexico's community-powered public radio, KUNM 89.9. I'm R.C. Chapa, and this morning we're focusing on men's health with Father's Day coming up this weekend. And June being Men's Health Month, we thought we'd celebrate men this morning and ask you to call in your questions. And we have doctors this morning answering your questions. I believe we have John on the line. John, good morning. John, good morning. You're on the air. Okay, we'll try John in a little bit. Okay, let's try Stuart. Stuart, good morning.
Good morning.
You're on the air.
Yes, I have which may not be a simple question. What is the opinion or opinions of the doctors of the new robotic surgery for prostate cancer versus the old hand method of a surgeon wielding the scalpel, etc.
Okay. Well, good morning, Stuart. This is Dr. Weiss. It's interesting that you should bring that up because actually my best childhood friend from Switzerland, I grew up in Geneva, Switzerland, is the head of the Department of Urology at the University of Geneva Medical School, and he is pretty much does all his surgeries via the robotic method. And I was fortunate enough to attend one of them when I visited him a few years ago. And basically, according to him, it is a preferred method because it reduces the postoperative time, the recovery time in the hospital, so thereby reducing nosocomial infections, which are hospital-based infections. And it also you can do very precise and what's called nerve sparing surgery that spares the nerves and therefore reduces incontinence and erectile problems postoperatively. So definitely in favor of that myself. But you have to find a surgeon who's well trained and has done many of the procedures.
Do we have the access to that in New Mexico?
We actually do at the University of New Mexico. Cancer Center. They have at least there's one. I think Dr. Khan is well trained and has done hundreds of robotic surgeries. And so I totally agree with Dr. Weiss. I think it represents a technology that's will only improve as we go along, not just with urologic surgery, but with other surgeries as well. But there is one caveat. And the last two patients that I've had that have had prostate cancer were actually not candidates for robotic surgery because they've had other surgical procedures and they had other anatomic issues that would make an open procedure more appropriate.
I see. Let's see. We have Andrea on the line. Andrea, good morning.
Hi. I think this call might be related to Stuart's, although I couldn't really understand because I was listening on the phone. But I'm basically wondering if there's maybe any diet changes or health changes in general that my husband could make that could counter his hair loss. His hair loss seems to be due to stress. It's been rapid lately. And that's my question. Thanks.
Hair loss.
Well, I'll simply answer. If you think it's due to stress, then the best recommendation is stress reduction. And so it's really getting a handle on that stress. And of course, there are many ways to do that, including meditation, tai chi, exercise. There's many different forms of hair loss. So you have to first, if it's just male pattern baldness, then that's related to testosterone. In fact, saw palmetto is a 5 alpha reductase inhibitor, so it inhibits the conversion of testosterone to dihydrotestosterone, which seems to be the culprit in male pattern baldness. So you'd want to block that as well. But again, as I said, there's different kinds of hair loss. So there's something called alopecia areata, which is little hair loss in little like circular lesions of hair loss that are very distinct and discrete, and that's an autoimmune condition. It's also often related to stress. So again, we have to first make the proper diagnosis. But in your husband's case, stress management seems to be the first order of business.
Well, what are some things that men can do at home to improve their health? And I kind of posed the question earlier as well as to what are some of men's health issues that might not be specific to biology, depression? What are some of the issues that men do have that we have not talked about this morning?
Well, speaking from a global perspective, I think we have a lot of issues that are culturally engendered that need to be challenged and that are actually create conflict in the individual as far as time management, as far as value of work and money and family and time with loved ones and so forth. So I think my personal opinion is that in order to maximize your health, then you have to be able to integrate a disciplined approach to life, which includes, exercise, proper diet, meditation. I actually think that a mindfulness approach to understanding the way you live is a core behavior, mm-hmm. and will become much more important and much more discussed by physicians as we go along. So, and those are basic practices that everybody should institute, I think.
Well, I read about that mindful living. Can you expand on that, Dr. Weiss?
Yeah, being mindful is simply being in the present moment and being aware of all that is around you, of what's directly in front of you. Most of us many of us are in our heads a lot, and because of stress and time constraints, we're actually living in our minds, and we're not present. So we're actually either living in the past or living in the future, worrying about the future, and that has a lot of health consequences. And there's a big body of literature on the health benefits of mindfulness meditation. The Center for Life here in Albuquerque teaches wonderful classes on mindfulness meditation. I believe UNM does as well. I mean, that may be their only the only place where they teach it. I'm not sure, but they have a very good instructor there, and I think it's a 6 or an 8 week program. So it's simply, simple practice is simply to focus on the breath going in and out of your nostrils. It's a breath meditation. And again, it immediately takes our awareness away from the stress and the worry and to the present moment, because you can actually either hear the sound of the air going through your nostrils or feel the air going through. And it immediately puts us in the present moment. And it's a stress buster, and it's just makes one much happier to live life in that way and not be in the ups and downs of the mind. In India, they call the mind the monkey mind. It's this mind. It's the mind that jumps from tree to tree all over the place. And if one is stuck there, it's like a roller coaster, and it creates a lot of cortisol, a lot of stress hormone production, and makes one pretty miserable. And another thing I'd like to say is that it's possible to focus on the space in between thoughts. This is something that Deepak Chopra has talked about, and it's something I do in my life. It's been very helpful. And the more you do that, the more that a certain quietude and calm begins to pervade. And then at some point, the thoughts are much less likely to bother you.
Well, how do you begin to practice that? How do you get, Joe the plumber to start meditating?
Well, I actually am asked that question all the time, and people will basically say, well, can you recommend a good book on this, Doc? Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot in the literature, and I would recommend a book called The Wise Heart blanking on the author's name. He's a psychologist, but The Wise Heart. And at the end of each chapter, it has a specific kind of meditation. But having said that, what I usually tell my patients is that you're a natural meditator, and that what you need to do is to rather than to put off the process by some academic. It was Jack Kornfield, right? He's the author. Thanks. And but I think if people just start by developing a 15-minute practice of sitting and watching their breath, like Dr. Weiss was talking about, that's the best way of doing it.
Okay, let's see. We've got Michael on the line. Michael, good morning.
Good morning. Yes, I just wanted to recommend Johns Hopkins puts out a white paper on prostates and on, actually on several health issues. And it's more than just a paper. It's about an 80-page thing. It's about $20 or so. And I find it very helpful. They put it out every year and add to it, you know. And the other thing I think is really important that I did is cut back on alcohol in my 40s. And I'm in my late 60s now, and I feel great. And I'm a prostate cancer survivor as well from a couple of years ago. And I'm not sure exactly what caused that, although I've heard cutting back on fat is a good idea.
So I do want to talk about that. Michael, thank you so much for calling.
That Johns Hopkins white paper is really great. I highly recommend it.
Okay. I want to talk about, follow up with Michael, but first go to Tom. And Tom, can you talk about the event this Saturday, please?
The event on Saturday is going to be a walk at Legacy Church. It starts at 8 o'clock in the morning, and it will last for about 2 hours. Mm-hmm. And we hope to have at least 1,000 people present.
And this is the Prostate Cancer Support Association of New Mexico is holding this walk Saturday. And where?
At Legacy Church.
At Legacy Church. Okay. Now, doctors, Michael just talked about reducing alcohol intake. Anything else that people can do? You know, we'll take it to the end of the show to help themselves at home. We've talked about meditation. Now, Michael talked about reducing alcohol intake. What other things can people do?
Well, exercise is extremely important. I just attended a conference here in Albuquerque called On Healthy Doctoring, and a whole lecture was devoted to the benefits of exercise. They can't be understated. They say that patients who don't exercise at all have the same health risks as somebody who smokes a pack a day, okay? And that exercise, and a minimum of 30 minutes of brisk walking 5 days a week is mm-hmm. considered moderate exercise, and that has enormous health benefits. And so that's one thing. I mean, across the board, the improvements in life expectancy and in health. Also, one should say is that the healthiest diet on the planet is the Mediterranean diet. And that has been studied extensively and includes things like nuts, walnuts, almonds, lean meats, olive oil.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, some fruits, lots of fruits and vegetables. And that, again, has wonderful health benefits. And spiritual life is extremely important. Connecting to a higher power, mm-hmm. Prayer and whatever works for the individual mm-hmm. in terms of their connection to a higher power is very important. Pets, having pets has been shown to be helpful in terms of many different areas. And I think right relationship. Both in intimate relationships and just integrity with others, the way. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I would like to mention that I've been part of a men's group for 5 years, and we meet once a week called the Mankind Project. And that has also been a real blessing in my life, and where we just talk very openly and express our feelings and incorporate the different archetypes, male archetypes, into our lives. It's work of Robert Bly. Mm-hmm. Iron John is a wonderful book that he's written about the dilemma of the male men in our culture. Mm-hmm. We haven't gone through an initiation process like indigenous cultures. And so this type of men's work is a way of recultivating some of our what it is to be a man and mm-hmm. trying to incorporate those into our lives.
So as we head on towards Father's Day, Dr. Tryon, any other advice you'd like to give?
Enjoy your family.
And one other thing before we run out of the co-op newsletter had a really good article about sugar, how it's basically considered poison. I mean, would you agree with that in like two answers?
Yes.
Two words, yes. So that should
I mean,
be...
again, you know, everything in moderation. I mean, right. I love, you know, I mean, mm-hmm. desserts in moderation, yeah. but you know, it's not a health food.
Yeah, okay. That's all the time we have. Our engineer this morning was Kevin Smith. Our phone screener was Michael Hess. I'm Marcy Chapa. Thanks for listening.